Blog Talk Radio.
Hey, good evening, podcast audience. And as always, my main man, Robert Frost. How you doing tonight, Rob?
I'm doing pretty well, Ken. Thank you.
All right, good, good. Hey, and as always, we try to put together a nice little injury compensation half hour for you. It's the funny, not the funny thing, but the thing with injury compensation, at the level which we work, we could probably do a show every week on two forms and never cover everything about those forms. We could cover a CA1 and CA2 forever and still not cover everything about it. It just is so funny that with all the information being spread through this podcast, through the Federal Injury Center's our Facebook on Wednesday night, through Elite Medical, we are still running across employees who are saying they have no knowledge of what should take place should they when they become injured at work. Tonight, I have a main topic that hopefully tonight Chris and Jeannie will get a chance to pop in on the podcast line. I was speaking with them earlier today about a situation an employee had, and they've already provided me with the guidance that I needed, but it'd be nice to hear it from them if they were available. So they may stop by, but if they can't, then they've already provided me with the quality answer for the podcast listeners. But before we talk about that situation, let's talk about a situation that Rob and I are aware of at work with an employee who was in a casual employee who was hurt at work, and now she's on the mail handler, she's an MHA or casual, Robert?
She's a casual who's been selected as an MHA.
Okay.
But not
a casual
promoted yet.
Okay, they're waiting for a slot to open for her. Now, to the best of my knowledge, the fact that you're a casual and you have an OWCP number, you have a valid claim, that should not keep you from permanent employee, or in this case, the next level of employee being an MHA. That should not keep you. In fact, I would think that if you were hurt at work, that the post office, again, if they deem your accident, and here's the funny thing, if they deem your accident to be sincere, again, I didn't say if it was or not, if postal management deems it to be sincere, then you won't have any problem when it's time for you to become an MHA. If they deem, not the Department of Labor, if the post office deems it not to be official and maybe thinks some shenanigans are going on, then they're going to try to hinder you becoming an MHA. But if it's already accepted by OWCP, that means you've got a valid claim number, and you should be contacted when an MHA position becomes available. Now, there's some other issues going on there that's going to also tie over into an issue that I wanted Chris and Jeannie to explain to us tonight, and that is when you're out of work, you are authorized, again, if you get hurt at work, you are authorized, you don't have to use your own leave for an at-work injury. I mean, let me say that again. If you get hurt at work, you're not required to use your own personal leave, whether it's FMLA or any other type of leave, because what happens is, if it's an accepted injury, now you're using FMLA. FMLA protects you from post office taking adverse actions against you, but FMLA does not cover or does not compensate you for an on-the-job injury. If you use your leave so that you can make appointments, et cetera, then you are entitled to leave buyback if that leave is in direct association with your on-the-job injury. Can you explain that a little further for me, Robert?
excuse me. Yeah, in other words, if you get injured and you're off work, and basically the only reason to take leave when you're off work for a work-related injury is so you got money coming in until that first check gets to you, whether it be from COP or workers' comp. And once you use leave for that, you are eligible to buy it back. Now, they don't, I don't remember the exact formula on how much they'll charge you for it. All right. In other words, if you use 40 hours of leave, then they only let you buy back 30 hours. But you still have that option. All right. That way, you're not actually losing a whole lot because of the injury. If you're using FMLA, you're wasting your FMLA.
But a lot of times, people are having to use that FMLA in conjunction with their sick leave for so that there's no interruption in their check. And more importantly, that FMLA protects them. That FMLA protects them while they're absent from work, so that Columbus don't greet you with a PDI for irregular attendance.
Yeah,
which
it
should
also
never happen.
Protects your job.
And protects your job first and foremost. And that should never happen. But again, if management truly understood injury compensation and truly understood how to help employees, then this would not even be an issue. But they don't understand, so it is an issue. In fact, I'm gonna skip over just a little bit. The exact case that I was referring to was as you know, I do EEOs for Columbus, Ohio, and I'm in the process of doing an EEO. And in discovery of an EEO case, here's some facts. Again, it's an EEO case, but it's about injury compensation. Individual got hurt at work, got a CA-1 form. This has been 2 or 3 years ago. Got a CA-1, got an accepted claim. Now they have FMLA, so they can take off work as a result of their on-the-job injury. Now, I just found this out today during discovery, and I let him know. And again, I had to contact my subject matter experts, Chris and Jeannie from Federal Injury Centers, and I asked the question, and can he buy back that leave, or is that leave forfeited to him? Well, here's what happened. After an accepted claim, you definitely can get your time back through leave buyback. The fact that FMLA was used just to protect your job. Leave buyback is available to anyone with an accepted claim. So if you're on this line and you hear what we're saying, if you were injured at work and you use your own time, as long as you have an accepted claim, you can buy this time back. And then I asked another question is, how far back can they go? And the response to that was, you can go back to the original date of injury after the claim is accepted in order to buy back any time that you use for an on-the-job injury. So I say to anyone who's injured at work and the post office is moving slow or not advising you on such forms as the CA-7 modest reimbursement, which we'll get to in a minute. If you're injured at work and you use your own time, listen, you are entitled to that time back. The key indicator or the key point is you must have an accepted claim. Because if you have an accepted claim, it doesn't matter what the post office thinks or what anybody thinks. That claim is accepted. And any time used that you miss work as a result, excuse me, any time that you've missed work as a direct result to that on-the-job injury, you are entitled to buy that time back. So if it happened to you, I don't care if it's a year ago or 2 years ago, if it happened to you and you're interested in buying that time back, please contact Robert Frost or myself, and we will walk you through that process on what it is you need to do. Now, naturally, the further we go back, you know, the more detailed we're going to have to be as we request the time. But again, if you use your own time to cover missing time from work as a direct result of an on-the-job injury, you are entitled to that time back. And if you haven't already applied for it, it's not too late. In fact, as long as you are working in the post office, as long as you're working in the post office, it's not too late. So there is no definite end date on when it should happen or how long you have to file that claim, in other words. Does that make sense?
Yes.
All right. So, again, if you're using your time and you don't have to, go get your time back. And in short, that's what we want to do. Now, also, that form for mileage reimbursement, that issue came up again in a conversation. And, Robert, could you please explain that form and take them through when they would use that form again?
Wait, I'm sorry. Say that again. Which form?
The mileage reimbursement. What is that, the 159?
957, I believe.
957?
Hang
yeah.
on just a second.
Can you... OWCP 957.
Yep.
Yeah, could you just go over that form for me?
Yep, I'm pulling it up at the moment.
Okay.
All right. It's a very complicated looking form, but in fact, it's actually one of the easier forms that you can fill out for the workers' comp. There are three locations on the form that you need to put information in. When I say locations, I'm talking about groups, all right? Aside from your name, address, claim number that's at the top, which you have to put that on almost every form, all right? You go down to line 5A, date of travel. Then 6A is also date of travel, and so is 7A. Those three spaces are for three different days that you went to see a doctor or went to physical therapy or went to a procedure required for your injury, an MRI, an X-ray, any kind of test that's related to your injury. You can claim for mileage. Now, date of travel is the day you went there. Now, keep in mind, workers' comp, if you have two appointments the same day, workers' comp will only pay you for one. So anytime you have appointments, try not to make them the same day. Put down the date of travel for your appointment. Then below that, it's one way or round trip. Always select round trip unless you're going out of town after you see your doctor. And by out of town, I mean going to go visit family or going on a cruise or whatever, then that would be one way. Because you're not going to end up back at your house that same day. Travel from, your choices are hospital, office or clinic, lab or home. Generally, you're going to select home. Then beside that is travel to, hospital, office or clinic, lab or home. Well, you can't go from home to home, so skip that part. Generally, it will be office or clinic. Maybe a lab because they may need blood tests. Whatever it is, pick the closest thing. Put an X there. All right? Then below that in section E is medical facility name and address. There are three lines for that information. And then to the right of that is Section G, private auto only miles traveled. This is the place you put down how many miles it is round trip to your appointment. Now, the workers' comp does not pay 0.3 miles. In other words, if you have to travel 9.3, you can only put down 9. Unless it hits 0.5, and then you can put the 0.5 down or round it up to the next higher mile. And remember, this is round trip miles. So when you do a Google search from your home to your appointment's address, remember, that's only going to give you one way, so you have to double it. If you forget that, you have to call workers' comp and explain you made an error and resubmit a new form, again, with just one-way miles on it for the same dates. And they will pay for that. But you have to call them first. You can't just resubmit it because they'll say that they already paid you for it. All right? The 6A through E and the 7A through E are the same thing, office, one-way, round trip, whatever, and address. And then G for each of those sections is, again, your miles. You have up to 1 year to file for your mileage. All right? What that means is if today, for example, today is July 9th, 2019. If you had if you went to a doctor's appointment for your injury on July 9th or July 10th, 2018, you could claim it as long as you got it in today. If you wait and do it tomorrow, you won't get paid for it. All right. They want you to submit these every 2 weeks. Your HRM wants you to. There's less paperwork for them. You do not have to. I personally wait 6 weeks before I submit mine. But you do have to keep good records. It's really a simple form, and the only real issue with anything workers' comp related is when you actually get paid for what you submit, and that's going to depend on the HRM that you are assigned to. You have to submit your documentation, whether it be this mileage form, your CA-7, CA-7A, every weekend between your paydays. Friday, Saturday, Sunday, or Monday, between paydays. Your HRM is going to look at this stuff probably on Monday. They won't finish it until Tuesday, and then they're going to submit it to workers' comp, which means it'll automatically be at least a week behind. If you get lucky, your HRM will submit it on Monday, and you'll get paid for it on Friday. Do not count on that. Always figure it's going to take 2 weeks. Because the Treasury Department only pays on Fridays. And if they don't have the information on Monday, they don't have time enough to go through it and verify it and send you your money. You got to remember, this is federal workers' comp, and every state in the union and Puerto Rico and Guam fall under this. So you've got millions of people submitting their paperwork pretty much at the same time. That's why it's not going to get done right away. But plan on 2 weeks before you actually see the money. The mileage rate is currently 54.5 cents per mile. So that's nothing to sneeze at. I mean, that'll pay for most of a tank of gas if you file it every 3 weeks or so, every month. And it's money that is yours. The federal government says they owe you this money for going to see the doctor for your work-related injury. Claim it. Don't throw it away. Right? If you don't claim it, it's just going to stay in the Treasury Department, and they'll use it for whatever they want to use it for. So I'm a firm believer in making sure Uncle Sam pays me everything he owes me. Because sure as the world, he's going to get as much out of me as he can. Turnabout straight away, you know?
That's a fact. If you owe Uncle Sam, trust me, he's taking all his money. But if he owes you, you'll get it. but just not with the same, just not as quick as he's going to take it.
That's true, but there again, with Uncle Sam, if he owes you, he's not going to tell you. If you don't tell him you want your money, he's going to keep it. He's not going to try to pay you.
And you know, it's so funny that the government, if they owe you, they owe you. They owe you. Now, if you don't inquire, they don't send notices out. And I think that's just rotten if you think about it. They know they owe you money, and if you ask for it, they'll give it to you, but you got to ask.
Exactly. Now, on the bottom of this form is claimant's or payee's signature and date. On the date, you have to be very specific. The date you're faxing this to workers' comp or to your HRM is the date that has to be on it. So if you fax this in on Monday, for whatever Monday's date is, it has to be dated for that Monday. You cannot date it on Friday and then fax it on Monday. They will send it back to you and say it's wrong, do it again. And then you've got to wait another 2 weeks.
So meticulous attention to detail when you fill these forms out is paramount. Again, the system will work, but you have to work the system. You can't just willy-nilly send in documents that are not complete and expect them to piece together what dates are missing. They're not going to do that. If you don't send them everything they need to make a decision, they're going to send it back to you.
Yes. And not so much on this particular form, the mileage refund, but on your other forms. For example, if you have to file a reimbursement claim for medicine, if your decimal point is in the wrong place, they will send it back and not necessarily tell you what's wrong. They'll just say, this section is incorrect, fix it. And you have to figure out what's wrong.
So very important to remember, when we deal with the Department of Labor, very, very, very important to understand that if you do the right thing as far as following the procedures when submitting forms and following up, they will make sure you're compensated. But it seems that they look for opportunities not to process your claim as opposed to trying to reach out to you to make sure you get your claim processed properly. So
that's
if you
correct.
Don't, if you make an error, that error is going to cost you time. Where if you leave a date off, one might think that as you look at the form, come on, you got to know that this date is this date. If you don't fill it in, it's coming back to you. So the point I'm really trying to get to is if you are not familiar with these forms, or even if you are familiar, there is a host of individuals right in the Columbus area that you have contact to, that you have access to, that is here trying to assist you in making sure you get proper compensation. Now, if you don't take it upon yourself to reach out to these individuals, then I don't know what to say. And when I say reach out to these individuals, you have myself, Branch President Hodge. You've got Robert Frost. We have Jeannie and Chris from Federal Injury Centers. You have Antonio Smith from Elite Medical. Now, come on, folks. If that's not enough for you, then I don't know what is. So I like to tell anyone, if you receive any kind of injury at work, that you have to report, or that you do report. I won't say have to report, even though you should. Any kind of injury that you report at work, my advice to you would be to reach out to one of those individuals I just named, and they can provide guidance. If you reach out to Jeannie and Chris, you're going to get an earful of good information. If you reach out to Antonio Smith, if you're in Columbus right here in town, you're going to have access to a full functioning facility that's got rehabilitation. They have an injury comp doctor, and that's right here in Columbus, Ohio. So for for you to work in Columbus. And again, I don't know how far the podcast reach. Well, I do know, but if you're in Columbus, Ohio, and you're not listening to this podcast, and you work in a post office, you still have access to all this information. So again, use it. The folks that I put you in contact with, this is what they do for a living. This is their profession. Never mind a postal manager. Never mind that postal supervisor trying to advise you. If you're in this area and I put you in contact with Chris and Jeannie or Antonio Smith, well, those two companies, excuse me, if you're in the Columbus area, Elite Medical is going to be here, full processing center, providing whatever you need. If you're in most other parts of the world, federal injury centers with Chris and Jeannie, they'll be there to provide you whatever you need. And as long as you hear the Kenny and Rob Injury Comp podcast on Block Talk Radio, we're always going to put you or guide you to a subject matter expert that's standing by ready to help you. Now, I do have a caller on the line, and I was just want to know, does a caller have a question for us tonight? Okay, we're good. I do appreciate you joining in with us. Again, we're trying to make people over. I'm sorry. Hey, Rob, talk to me real quick on that CA7.
Exactly. What were you referring to with that? As
what is that CA7? What is that form for? What is the CA7 used for?
All right, the CA7 is a claim form for your time. So is the 7A. All right, the CA7 is basically the cover letter for the CA7A. All right, basically you have to tell them. It's primarily if you're off work for the injury. You have to tell them, you know, the pay period that you're off, beginning and ending. Whether it's leave without pay, if you want a leave buyback, you'd use this form for that. Other wage loss, such as night differential, stuff like that. Or if you get a schedule award. A schedule award is where you've been awarded permanent disability and they're paying you either monthly or in a lump sum. Okay? Those are hard to get. They're out there. They're available. But you do have to follow the steps that the workers' comp requires in order to be considered for it. That's a whole other podcast, actually, probably two or three.
No, again, right? Those forms just came up, and I just wanted you to touch on them just a brief bit for me.
Okay. Essentially, that's what it is. It's the date range and your case number and other identifying information to identify you and what your injury was referred to. All right. There's other information on it. I'm not going to go over all of that because first of all, the first time you need a CA7, you have to fill the entire form out. It's a one-page form. Anytime after that, you only have to fill out certain sections. And that's easier done just asking me face-to-face, and I'll pull one of the forms out and show you. Okay? Mm-hmm. And then, again, at the bottom is your signature and the date that you're faxing it. All right? The CA7A, which is the companion for the CA7, is your time analysis form. And this is where you put down the date that you were either off or that you worked or both, and whether you're going to claim compensation for the time off or not. There's a section that says LWOP for under number of hours, and then there's worked hours, holiday hours, and leave if you use leave. All right, this is the back of the how do I put it? I can't think of the right word right now. Anyway, this is the backup form for the CA7 when you want to buy your leave back.
Right.
You have to put down how many hours on this form. Okay. And the reason. Now, reason can be doctor visit, therapy visit, an exam of some type, a test of some type, whatever. There are there's like 13 or 14 lines on this, and you do have to be specific and be careful when you put your dates down and your compensation claimed, especially if you use the electronic version, because sometimes it won't let you change things back. Under the LWOP, you put down how many hours you were off work, whether it's 1, 8, whatever. Next to that is worked. You put down how many hours you worked that day. All right. This is a daily record for your time off. At the bottom, it automatically totals up, but the form doesn't always do that. It'll come up with some really weird numbers. Put one line through it if it's not a legitimate number. Put your initials below it, and then above it, write the correct number that should be there.
Okay, podcast audience, that's all the time we're going to have on this show. We'll pick up on that CA7. We'll start the show next week with that. But I just wanted to say in closing that, listen, folks, if you get injured at work, the federal government has taken a lot of care to make sure you receive rehabilitation and compensation. Don't let that just walk away from you because you're not aware and your supervisor's not aware. Tap into some of the resources that we're making available to you. And again, this is at no profit to me or to Rob. This is just so that we hold ourselves accountable to ensure that you get the proper treatment and the proper compensation that you're due. So with that being said, this is Ken Hodge signing off on Blog Talk Radio, the Kenny and Rob Injury Compensation Podcast. I thank you for joining us tonight, and I'm going to say good night, Robert, and I will see you at work tomorrow.
All right. Good night, Ken. Good night, audience.
All right. Good night, audience.